Attention aspiring musicians of all levels from all over the world. Want to learn to play guitar or bass like your heroes? Well, I have the guy for you. Multi-instrumentalist Corey Glazer has played with Fastball, Paula Nelson, Skyrocket, me, and many more. In fact, his song Needle Hits the Groove is our theme song. Corey's been teaching for over 2 decades and is now offering his services all over the world via Zoom. So if you want to learn rock, country, R&B or funk, folk or jazz on guitar or bass, just go to CoreyGlazer.com or follow the link in the text of this podcast and start shredding on guitar or slapping the bass like a pro with Corey Glazer at CoreyGlazer.com. Let's get down. Attention Austin guitarists, are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the best job, but he has the best prices and the fastest service in town. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Gang, whether it's acoustic, electric, or bass, Jason Swedberg is your guy. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. All right, go get your guitars fixed. Let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week. I think I've had a good week. I'm not sure anymore what's going on. I will tell you this one thing, though, gang. Look, we have to deal with a lot of people's opinions. We have to deal with the, hey, I voted. We have to deal with political ads. We have to do all this stuff. Guys, I voted early. I already voted. And now I still have to deal with this stuff on a daily basis. Every time I open any social media of mine, it's like, oh, you got to vote. Oh, hey, vote for this guy. Isn't there in this vast, like, technological web we live in now, where everything is tied into everything, can't you just come home and tell your Google Nest, like, hey, dig this. Take me off the list. I voted. And then you don't have to see anything again until November 4th. If you don't want to. Wouldn't that be cool? Let's see. If anyone out there is technologically savvy enough, I would appreciate it if you took this up for me. It's a fight I'd like to take all the way to the top. Sorry, I don't know why I'm talking like a 70s stoner. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Musician, producer, studio owner, and activist. David Messier is my guest on the show today. You might know David. He owns Same Sky Productions with Andre Cantave. It's a great studio here in Austin. And he releases solo albums. He's got Time Bomb, Waiting for Eldridge, great records. He's been on the show before. And as I said, he served as the president of the Grammy board there, of our chapter of the Recording Academy. I got to stop talking about that. You can find him at davidmessier.com. But David Messier has taken to YouTube, and he's created these little variety shows that are super entertaining and hilarious, okay? They're called The Ugly People Need Haircuts. I'll put a link to his YouTube page in the text of this podcast, but you can also find him at davidmessier.com. He writes songs for these. He makes videos for these. There are puppets involved. It's maddening. In fact, when I first saw it, I mean, I know David. He's, you know, pretty straight dude. He's a cool guy. All of a sudden, I watched this really insane video, and all I could think was, man, are you okay? That's the main question I got. But you know what? That's one of the great compliments I can give someone, because I love art that's made from madness. And David Messier is doing a great job of entertaining us during this very difficult time. And he's really, really gone creative. I mean, some of these videos are pretty incredible. Some of the songs are really great. Some of the puppet scenes are great too. I know that sounds funny with me saying that, but David and I have a great conversation. We also have a great conversation about being a studio owner during this time and keeping his studio safe and open and getting people to come in. There's a great piece in Billboard I'll try and find it and put a link to it in the text of this podcast as well, where he talks a lot about that. They interview him and a bunch of different studio owners about how they're doing and how they're keeping the recording process safe, where basically the main job is to go into the room with a few people and sit there for hours upon hours upon hours, days, weeks, sometimes months. Anyway, David Messier, great dude. Also, he's an activist. We talk a lot about some of the activism he's been involved in with the rights of musicians and songwriters and publishers and stuff. So great conversation. David is a fantastically talented man. He is hilarious, and he is a great hang. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with the amazingly talented and always hilarious Mr. David Messier. Let's get down.
You ever have a dream, but an ugly dream, where things turn into other things? You ever have a thought, just a simple thought, but then words turn into other words, your words turn into ugly words, and I'm sorry for my...
I'm much happier now.
Studio looks good.
Thank you, sir.
Are you, is there work coming through?
Thankfully, yes. We have suffered like everyone has. And we were closed, you know, when we had to be.
Right.
Same thing. It's the same story, right? You know, South By disappears. That's generally a big week, you know, for us at the studio. And it would have been this year as well. You know, corporate things. People spend a lot of money to... have cocktails here, you know.
Oh, yeah,
more money
yeah.
than they'll spend to record. It's kind of this odd thing, but and then of course we had to close, so we were down for a while, and we figured out a way to reopen when we could. But we have, you know, taken some time off in between. We opened in May, had a few things going on May and June, July, August was just really slow, and we've got, you know, probably a fully booked September and most of October. So I feel like we've got some momentum, you know, which
yeah.
is nice.
I read that article in Billboard about reopening back up in May and your FU COVID plan.
Yeah.
yeah. I have a question for you. I've been working a bit in this time, but with a one person situation, you know what I mean? Like one other person.
Yes.
So it's a little bit different, and it's at a dude's home, but was it a vibe crush? Because that was your thing. You didn't know if that was going to kill the vibe of all
yeah.
this. Like, did you touch this? You know what I mean? Like,
no, yeah,
where have
absolutely.
You been? Like, that's a big
I
thing.
I know.
Yeah.
God. Well, you know, I don't think so. I've certainly seen... and heard, you know, creativity and beauty and spontaneity, all the things that we ultimately are trying to achieve in the studio, you know. Part of the trick is to front load all the sort of safety stuff, right? You know, it's like, okay, we send them in advance a form to fill out, you know, where you've been, what's going on.
Oh, really?
Temperature. Yeah. Take it when you get in, if you haven't filled it out, you fill it out. We take your temperature and a quick rundown of, hey, you know, keep our distance, keep your mask on. And, you know, it'd probably be different if we were the only place where this happened. But, you know, how many months has it been now that people are wearing a mask to the grocery store and to, you know, the post office, et cetera? So I don't believe it's been a vibe crush. And it kind of can't be, right? Because we have no other choice. It's like,
right.
When you're in the middle of creating something, all sorts of things go wrong. You know, the power goes out, you break a string on this instrument.
Yeah.
Now we got to wait and fix that. It's like, well, you know, okay. So now we have to wait 15 minutes till the singer's done, for all the droplets to settle, you know, then you go in and sanitize everything and rush in fresh air from the outside world. And then at the end of the session, there's, you know, an hour of sanitation, and we bring in these UV lights that, you know, you have to power up with a remote control. You can't be in the room with them. It's like weapons grade, you know, and just, you know, burn everything off in excess of caution one last time. I mean, can you imagine somebody, you know, getting sick or getting someone else sick in your sacred space? That I just, it kept me up at night, you know?
Yeah.
Can we do this safely? Can we? Let's not make any assumptions.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we work with a lot of people we know and they're friends and, oh, they look healthy to me. You know,
yeah.
really can't, constantly staying aware of it. And that, as a studio owner, I feel like that's my job. You know, if I'm the guy doing that, then, you know, between Andre and Jackie, and if there's another producer on the project or the people in the band, you know, they can stay focused on the sound and the productivity. And I'm running around, you know, wiping down everything everyone touches as stealthily as I can.
Yeah. I was reading when you were talking in that Billboard piece about no one addressing the environment of a studio specifically. And then I thought, like, dude, I was at a party at your studio one time and Lloyd Doggett was there. Did you call him and be like, hey,
he called me.
Oh, he did.
You know? Yeah. I got to say, they've been, the congressman is a big supporter of music, and
he is,
you know, my phone rang somewhere, you know, around the middle of the week, South By, just to say, hey, you know, how you doing? What's going on? And then it rang again when there were all sorts of online fundraisers and GoFundMes and save this and save that. And they were kind of like, do you know about any of the, you know, what should we put our efforts behind?
Right,
you
right.
know, who's the, what's legitimate here? And in cases where I don't have the answer to those things, I just try to connect them to others who may. And I do think it's crazy to me that I have such a connection to a lawmaker, which really happened through the Recording Academy, their district advocate initiatives, where several times here at the studio, we've hosted those sorts of events, and Congressman Doggett would turn up. And, you know, it's been, we got a nice note from him when I got married.
Really?
Came to our 10th anniversary party. Yeah. He's, I see him on the trail, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen him. He bikes by. And it's you know, you never think of your representatives. I never did anyway, of just kind of being a guy in the community, but there he is on his bicycle. Hey, yeah. Lloyd.
Have you been going on the trail?
Not in a while. That's
yeah,
why
man.
You haven't seen me. You know,
when I haven't been on it either.
When they had it going in one direction.
No one's following
It lasted for about a weekend. I feel
really?
Like the first day. You know, it was like, oh, this is great. And then it was chaos. And I was, you know, trying to be helpful, saying, hey, guys, it's one way, you know, and people would
then
look
you're
at
that
me
guy.
Like, yeah. And then I'm like, well, and then it became 107 degrees. And I'm just like, yeah, the trail will hopefully see me again in October.
Yeah. There was a little while where I felt okay on the trail in like June. And
yes.
then I got off it again. And now I just go
yeah.
through the neighborhoods around here.
Yeah, I've been not out as much in the last few weeks, but I was quite a bit in June. It just gets too hot for me. It just ruins my day if I go out there too long.
Yeah. All right, we got to talk about the ugly people need haircuts. And
did you get a chance to watch it?
Yeah, man.
I'm curious.
Well, dude, you're coming to the right person when you. When you send me something like that, a variety show where a guy is like by himself, openly losing his mind musically and with puppets, dude, I'm a fan. I mean, I was like, you sent me the thing and I watched it and I was just like, shit, man, this is just like, first of all, are you okay? Like, that's the first question that came to mind. Second of all, I was like, I can get behind something like this, like 100%, because as a music artist, you have pivoted in this time. You are making music and music videos and putting it into a package that's different than you would have done last August. You know what I mean? Or last
yes.
summer, you know?
Yes.
You get to put in some some very important messaging in there, social messaging, but also it's fun.
I hope so. You know, I was trying to think of what I could do to share my art now. You know? And, of course, as soon as this, what's so funny, John?
No, I just went up, then the blue puppet first popped up because I watched the second one first.
Okay. Yeah.
I just started laughing, just like, wow, he's really doing this. Like, yeah. He's not fucking around.
Well, if you remember back in probably 2009, 2010, I was, playing with some video then and did a little thing called Same Sky TV. It was hosted by that puppet who would interview artists. And it's funny that occasionally I'll be out around town and someone will ask me about it. And it was like from 10 years ago, like, whatever happened with that show? And I was just looking for new ways to share, I guess.
Yeah.
As soon as this happened and everybody was locked down, everyone started live streaming from home. And I couldn't do it myself.
Right.
I thought it doesn't sound good. It doesn't look good. They've improved, thankfully. But I just felt like, man, like suddenly everyone had forgotten everything about what our jobs as writers or entertainers are. It's like we're supposed to put on a show and entertain people. And
right.
I would click on someone's live stream and they're kind of fumbling around like, let's see, what should I play next? And then there's that like reading the chat, Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What am
yeah.
I watching?
Yeah. Yeah.
What
yeah.
am I watching here? I don't want to do that. And, the studio was slow. So I felt like, well, let me get in there. And, I started writing the song, the first song of episode one, which honestly, the name of it is escaping me right now, Nothing to Do About It, something like that. And it really started with this chorus sound I had on the guitar. And, I started writing the song, and lyrically it felt like, well, this is kind of, it started to sound and read like what was happening to me, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's like, this is kind of how it feels to have been, to have had this happen where suddenly we're on lockdown and people in our industry, it wasn't a question of when do we go back to work. It's like, did I just lose my career? There was so much anxiety, so much nervousness about getting a virus. How do I perform? I mean, even if I'm allowed to, do I want to be a super spreader?
Right.
Do I want to? I remember that week of South by so well because, I had four or five shows and a couple of them just hadn't canceled yet. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So eventually I was the one that sent emails like, listen, I can't be a part of this.
Right.
If you really want to carry on with this, it's without me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So anyways, as I'm writing this piece of music and my mind just kept going, I said, I wanted to say more. And I wasn't finding an outlet in that with that particular song anyway. And I've never been much of an on topic writer.
Right.
I'm not like, well, let me write 10 songs about this thing.
Right.
So I started calling it a program. I started writing on a piece of paper here in the studio and showing it to Jackie and Andre. I go, no, it's a program. It's a program.
Yeah.
And there'll be this, and then we'll cut away to this, and then we'll go to that, and then we'll do this. I didn't think of the word in time. It's a special.
Yeah.
I think Andre the pointed out, yeah, like, remember when there was a special?
Yeah.
Well, I said, well, I'll do a special. And I'm always interested in what's the other thing. So for me, it was an excuse to, revisit Final Cut and work on some editing and After Effects. And
so that's you doing everything?
Myself that. Yes. I mean, I've got help, Andre and Jackie, certainly in most of both episodes were involved. I think there was one thing in episode one that I actually did by myself. I got my wife push play on the camera kind of thing because, no one could get together. This was like early on. And
right.
Then we found safe ways to work together ourselves. And it did become political for me. I mean, it did become something where I couldn't ignore what I was seeing and feeling. And it's very much about what I think and feel. It's not meant to be some sort of, I'm not prophesizing. It's not a mission statement or it's just, I'm just trying to express how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And I'll be happy to report I don't feel like I'm losing my mind, Johnny.
No, that's good. That's good.
I'm glad that crossed your mind. You know, the first piece in episode one is pretty stark.
Right.
and it really, when we're making the song, it's like, man, this kind of sounds like Peter Gabriel or something. And Andre ran into the other room and grabbed the album cover, that live Peter Gabriel live album, and where, you know, his face is white and he's got those, the big horns around his head or whatever. And so, well, all right, well, I shaved my beard and painted my face white. And the day before the video shoot, I've had this issue with my left eye for a number of years now that I have to go get treatments for. And the treatment is unfortunately an injection into the eye.
Ooh.
And I get it done every, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or something like that.
Jesus.
I'm very used to it. I'm very used to it now. Okay. It's no big deal at all. But, and my vision's back and it's all cool. But when the injection was done, it burst all these blood vessels in my eye. So my eye was just really red and angry. And we had planned, everyone was there. Well, we're going to shoot this thing. And what do they say now? You know, lean in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know? So I thought, well, that, you know, let's just. So we there was really not much of a plan. It was me against a green screen. Here I was painted, you know, and I was wearing coveralls. So, you know, we looked back at it and I said, I look like the guy from that horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But while I was singing, I just kind of felt like I just started throwing a seizure. And when we looked back at it, we said, oh, my God, that's horrific. I love it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, and I didn't know what to do with it, really. I sent it to Dave Madden's a real good friend of mine and a collaborator on a lot of things. I said, hey, will you look at this? And he actually was like, man, I think you really have, this really looks like everything feels right now.
Yeah.
It there's something on edge about it. Yeah. All right, well, I'll put it out. And then all the other pieces started to kind of come together. I have written a lot more for it. It's just, it's very time consuming to make these, to make video. Very time consuming.
Yeah.
Not like music. That can happen real quick. Although the technology is unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
You know, if you're able to watch it in HD, you know, it's I don't know. I think that's a setting on Facebook, but the raw files of this thing look incredible. This iPhone, this new iPhone, you point it at something and it looks great.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, okay. Well, really, let's just make sure the audio sounds great. And we didn't bother to master anything. I don't know what I'm going to do with the music. But so far, there's four new songs out there. And, you know, I have started finally a Facebook music page, David Messier Music. And these videos have been shared. The last song of episode two, a song called Cracked, you know, it
appeared
like 60 times or something like that. And outside of the episode of the show, I think the episodes of the show might be freaking people out. But the songs, when I've pulled them aside and placed them online, they're getting a lot of attention. So I'm starting to think, what do I do next? But
well, I like the show because it's there's a wackiness to it. You know what I mean?
There is or there isn't.
There is.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, and I appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad. I like humor. I like I like when rock and roll isn't so serious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a difficult line to walk because it's like, I mean, are we the Monkees?
Right.
What are we doing here?
Right.
Is this the Monkees, or, you know, is it the Beatles, or is it any? And by the way, just using ridiculous examples to bring this thought down to earth, I wouldn't compare myself to either of those artists or groups. But I think, do you know what I'm saying?
That it's, I know,
like,
exactly,
are we
just, what you're
fucking
saying.
Goofy here,
yeah, yeah.
Or is there a point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles happen to be super wacky.
Yes.
But somehow we're also, you know, geniuses. So it was kind of cool to have both things. There's like a, it's funny because there's like a, that you're from the Northeast, and there, to me, I feel like I have it too. Like there's a Northeastern comedy sensibility. Does that make sense? Is that weird?
Yeah. No, it's not. I think it's absolutely true. I mean, you know, I grew up on the South Shore of Massachusetts, and it, in looking at my life now, in my 40s, I'd say, what a great place to be from. You know, people are pretty intense. Things move pretty quickly. You kind of develop some thick skin, and you really do need a tremendous amount of sarcasm,
yeah,
to get through the winters and to get through just the pace and the attitude of people. And I have all of that as a result. I mean, you know, are there comedians coming out of Hawaii? What do you need a sense of humor for?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Everything's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Austin in the same way. It's like everything's just too nice and easy here, you know.
Yeah.
Where's the edge isn't there.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, I was going to tell you that the only reason why I was like, is he okay, when I saw the
I love
puppet
that question.
Was I heard this interview with you know, Jason Segel, he's an actor and director guy. You know that thing in God, what's the movie where the girl breaks up with them? You know what I'm talking about.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And he's doing that the story of Dracula as a puppet musical opera. Yeah. Well, that was a real thing he was doing when he was out of work. And he went to visit Judd Apatow, like, at his office. And he, like, pitched this to him. And apparently, like, at the end of the pitch, Judd Apatow got up and closed the door and was like, dude, you can't tell anyone you're doing this. This is the weirdest... Like, people are going to think you lost your mind. And so that's when I saw that Jason Segel interview. Of course, then he went on to direct the Muppet movie. So he was right.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think there's a lesson in there, Johnny, which is that a time like this, when your livelihood has been taken away from you, when there's real, you know, threat and anxiety of disease, dare I say, also, you know, civil war. I mean, this conflict that is palpable around the country. And then on top of that, again, you take that you can't perform. The artists and people, you know, everybody, the people who are going to give themselves a project, who are going to create themselves an opportunity to create and emote, are going to weather the storm better. I mean, it's good psychologically to have an assignment.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't conscious when I started doing this, but that's definitely part of this.
Yeah.
That were I not doing this, maybe I wouldn't be okay. But
right.
Because I am,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
getting it off of my chest.
Exercising the demons.
Yeah, and it felt good. It felt good to pick on the president. It felt good to, you know, play with puppets and try to make something, you know, a little bit lighter while still talking about,
right,
you know, what is happening, which I don't know that I've ever been terribly political in my art. Obviously, as a younger person, I was.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, me too.
Yeah, at 18, you know, you're trying to tell everybody, you know, what to do about everything.
Yeah.
This was a little bit of just, I gotta say, you know, what is happening. The whole thing with, you know, Sty being on a children's show and asking them to count the dead, was, you know, pretty dark, but, we laughed when we watched it back. We said, oh no, it works.
Right. Right.
You know, because we're certainly not making light of the dead. It's our sort of impotent response to it. That,
right.
I'm certainly upset about that. And humor is the weapon we have. Didn't, you know, wasn't that John Lennon who said, you know, if we, the system knows violence, right?
Right.
So if we respond violently, it knows how to deal with us.
Yeah.
Lock us up. It can take our rights away. It can, but you know, if we respond with art and humor, they don't know what to do.
Right.
And I think that's true.
Yeah.
And to an extent, what I'm trying to accomplish with The Ugly People Need Haircuts, and I've got two episodes of it.
When's, is there, there's a third coming? Is there one like in the middle of production or?
No, unfortunately, no. It took really a really long time to get the second one out, and I'm about to get very busy, but I have it. I mean, it's written on pieces of paper, and I've got the songs, and do I have the energy? I think so. Maybe so. But, you know.
Well, I look forward to it.
I didn't know I would do a second one. I didn't know I was going to do a second one. But and in that instance, how could I not talk about the violence that was, you know,
right,
happening everywhere? And again, what do I know about any of this stuff? I'm not suggesting that I know anything about it. I'm just writing about what's happening around me.
Well, the important thing is, I think that we've gotten to this place because we haven't really had those difficult conversations that need to be had. You know what I mean? And these conversations, if they're started by a puppet, are also very cool. You know what I mean? You're still starting a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And the dramatic lack of leadership across the board that our country is experiencing and seeing right now. And, you know, I was born in the late 70s, grew up in the 80s, and, you know, it was a very, you know, super America, fantastic. I mean, there was, you know, yeah, Hulk Hogan and, you know, Pledge of Allegiance. And it was, I didn't realize how much I think I still carried with me that had that. Well, I mean, we're America. I mean, surely there's a warehouse full of ventilators somewhere. And somebody knows how to distribute them, and somebody's going to do this and somebody's going to do that. And it, you know, in April, it became clear, you know, the cavalry isn't coming.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody's doing anything about this. For example, we were in Billboard magazine for a safety protocol for the recording studio.
Right.
I mean, think about that for a second, Johnny. We didn't invent Windex or, you know, invent Lysol.
No, I know.
All
yeah.
All we did was we just wrote it down.
Yeah.
You know, like that's how starved for leadership we are. It was like, whoa, these guys wrote something down? Wow. You know, like we better distribute this nationwide.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're doomed. You know, I have some faith in our local cats. I was really proud of Austin and Mayor Adler for canceling South by Southwest. Talk about what would have been a super spreader event. And probably change the city forever.
Oh God!
And
not
as
only
much
that,
of a bummer as it was.
How many people come in from out of town and everything? It would have been.
Oh yeah, 300,000 people from all over the world.
Yeah.
At the time, it to a lot of people it seemed early, and maybe arguably it was, but in retrospect, that's the right decision. So, for all the things that you know have been done wrong and handled wrong, we should still remember to be happy about that, I suppose. But
yeah. David, what's your role in the Recording Academy at this point? Are you just a member?
I'm a member. Yeah. I'm a member, and I'm still I'm still involved. I served as a governor, as president, and as trustee. You know, you're not meant to be there forever. You kind of, you know, you come on and off, and, at the moment I'm off, but I was still, you know, a part of their district advocate day and was able to meet with Senator Cornyn's office, you know, on Zoom like this and talk about some important legislation that would help.
About Save Our Stages, was that?
Yeah, that was part of it. In fact, Senator Cornyn introduced that.
He did,
legislation, which, was just great. You know, there's others, obviously, I mean, the Heroes Act, which has been, was passed by the House in May and is just sitting there. But there were a larger issue for most musicians was, as robust and in some ways very good as the CARES Act was, there was a big crack in it for people that had dual sources of income, meaning you get, say, a musician is this, right? You either work at a church or you teach at a school, and maybe you're getting a W-2 for that. Okay. And then you're in a band and you do session work and you're 1099 for all of that.
Right.
And what happened with unemployment was that it was like, well, they didn't know what to do with that. It's right. Like, pick one. It's like, the two together make a living. I can't just pick one and get unemployment for just one. So that really needs to be corrected with any aid that comes forward. And hopefully there will be more that we're taking into account the gig worker and the gig economy, which obviously stretches outside of music. But my interest being making sure that message is getting, that legislators are hearing that message about how this is affecting musicians, on the street. And there was a new House bill put forth bipartisanly, a representative from California and from Kansas or Kentucky. It's called the HITS Act, and that would allow music production to expense production costs in the first year, which is something we're not able to do.
Right.
Theater and movies are able to do it. But for some reason, music isn't, and projects where I'm producer or executive producer, where I'm handling the purse strings, we're, amortizing these costs over the life of the sound recording. Whereas if in that first very difficult year, you could expense that, would that maybe encourage some of the artists that do have the financial ability to get into the studio to do so?
Right.
So you're sort of advocating for those things. That's been my role in the Recording Academy the whole time. That's where I kind of found my spot. I honestly don't really care that much about the awards. I think judging art is kind of silly, I think.
Right.
I get it. I get, the importance of the show and,
sure,
and putting music on people's minds, but I volunteer my time for the advocacy, not for, not that they need my help to put on the broadcast, but
right,
what I mean.
You work a lot with Christine Albert.
Yeah. Through the Academy. Sure. We've never worked, creatively together
right.
in the studio or otherwise, but yeah, Christine's been, she was chair of the board.
Yeah.
In fact, I was watching one of their streams the other night, her and her husband.
Yeah.
They have a good show.
And they're badass. Chris is a monster.
Yeah.
He was about to do the show, they got corona or something early on.
They were sick. I think they ended up testing negative, but they were both, got knocked for a loop or something.
Well, the day that we were gonna do it was one of the first days he was sick, but I'd done all this, watching all this shit that he was on, not shit, but shows and just such a monster player,
Yeah.
Monster player. Great songwriter too. In all these talks, with the Recording Academy and with guys with Lloyd Doggett and stuff, is anyone saying oh man, the future is bad, or because the whole live industry, and I know that's not mainly where your roots are right now,
right?
That is definitely in a situation where venues are going to be gone, people that put on the shows, promoters are going to be gone.
Yeah they already are, right? If I look at I don't play live that often, but all the places that I do play in Austin are gone.
The Townsend.
I frequented the Townsend, One-to-One Bar, Threadgills, the places that I've played, they're already not there. So, it's happening, and it's catastrophic for the live music industry. And again, the messaging that the Recording Academy and myself, through that vehicle are trying to remind legislators is the number of jobs that it is. It's, we think often about the artist, but of course, you know, there's a stage manager and there's a light tech and a, and obviously the sound engineers, the monitor mixer and the front of house mixer and the bar staff and the cocktail waitresses and the person who tears the tickets. I mean, this is
and they have to pay rent and electricity. And like the thing with it was, they were very open about the thing with the 1-to-1. Their rent's $10,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Yeah, you're not going to find that in the couch cushions, you know?
No.
And yeah, you know, I don't see a clear path for the at the moment for the private sector to innovate its way out of this. And I think nor should it be entirely our responsibility. I think as a business owner myself, I'm in business with the government, right? I mean, that's how I've always thought about it.
Yeah.
I want the government to supply, you know, roads and the ability for people to get to right. my business and, you know, obviously the services of electricity and water that we use. But also, you know, should a pandemic require me to close my doors. I mean, that's a decision we would have made anyway, but it was required of us to close our doors. So right. what's it going to be? I mean, if you're going to require us to stop working, is it then reasonable to just expect everyone to what? You know, lose their home and their livelihood? And I don't think anybody feels that way, but we haven't. But our country certainly has not done enough, provided enough relief for venues, for creative businesses, and I would say for the entirety of the gig working economy.
Right.
It's paperwork is never easy for us.
No.
You know, even trying to get a loan or trying to HELOC your house or something, it's like, oh, wait, you get income from over here and from over here and from
right, yeah,
for this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's always a pain in the ass. And it was no different for folks trying to get this much needed relief as well. And clearly that has to change. I mean, this just cannot. Music is such an important part of our culture and our society and these businesses that cannot reopen because of a global pandemic should not have to close.
No.
It's very odd to me that we didn't have the intestinal fortitude to just hit the pause button, you know, back in April and just say, okay, look, you know, you don't have to pay your rent, but the guy, you know, the landlord doesn't have to pay his property taxes this month or this or that, hit the big pause button. It's like only America could spend, you know, $3 trillion and barely help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 Like, yeah. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
But no, I think to answer the earlier question, I haven't talked with the legislator who's just said, yeah, I mean, it, you know, we're doomed. You know, pack it up, head to Canada.
Well, I've read a couple of like big articles with like Live Nation people, and like I have some friends that work for C3, and there's like this you know what I mean, like just a very it's you know, I mean shit, it's the whole whatever live music capital of the world moniker we have is definitely just completely unable to exist in any way right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it, and it truly is. Johnny, I will live the rest of my life, however long that is, and not understand what the hell has happened.
Yeah.
You know, when I had to close the business, okay, I had to close the business. And then when the business was so slow that, okay, we've got to take a couple weeks off. We got to kind of furlough here for a month. And that was hard. I mean, that sucked. I've gone to work every Monday since I'm 14 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and this virus that can be defeated with dish soap, right? I mean, any cheap soap will stop it in its tracks. Yeah. Palmolive dish soap beats the coronavirus 10 times out of 10.
Yeah.
But our economy has dropped 35% and everybody I know is out of work. I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, we still haven't done the thing, you know, the countries that have, that are more back to a more normal way of life, they did the thing, right? They shut the whole thing down for 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
They used that time to organize a testing and contact tracing a plan, which they implemented, and then wearing masks went back to a more normal way of life.
Yeah.
And we still have not done those things here in the United States of America.
I feel like New York did the best of all of that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, in retrospect, it's like, I felt like I was aware of it at the time, you know? Remember every day watching Cuomo?
Yeah.
Because, like, it was like, oh, well, I'm not going to watch Trump. He's talking about the lung brush or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And okay, let's get some sanity and Cuomo. And, you know, it was like, and at the same time that was going on, Abbott was here in Texas saying, well, we're going to reopen.
Yeah.
And it's like, so you're not watching what's happening, you know, over there.
Yeah.
You're just not, we're not immune to this. It's just going to happen here a little later.
Right.
And pretty much on schedule it did, you know.
Unfortunately, we are in a very partisan, weird situation that on top of everything, there is this sort of like, it just informs kind of everything. It informs mask wearing. That seems to have been politicized. What you view having happened with the police and black people for years and years and years, you know. Yeah, it's been a very...
Everything. Everything is political. And as frustrating as it is, it's also... I understand it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm starting to really get a grasp on it.
Because it is, you know?
Yeah.
It most certainly is. How foolish that putting a mask on for 15 minutes in the grocery store is, you know, has caused so much calamity.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so... odd to me. I mean, I have friends who say things like, well, whatever, I'm not going to live in fear.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
I don't feel as though I'm living in fear. I feel as though I'm not going to go out to brunch because if I do, somebody's going to have to turn up to wash the dishes and someone's going to have to turn up to serve the food and someone's going to have to go and do this. And then you look at the stats and like, what? Is it almost 90% of the COVID cases in this part of Texas are Hispanic?
Yeah.
And you go, what? I can wait.
Yeah.
I've gone to a lot of, very fortunate to have gone to a lot of nice restaurants in my life.
Yeah.
And I hope to do it again one day, but we're ordering out from the restaurants that we love and want to support, but I don't get it, Johnny. Everybody's lost their mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like that. I don't want to take a left turn here, but you know, I still love that record, Time Bomb. Dave Madden produced that, right?
He did, yeah. We did it here at Same Sky.
Yeah.
you know, it fell off the wall the other day. I have a copy of it hung up here at the studio. And I walked in and it was smashed all over the floor.
Did Dave Madden do that?
No, no one was here. I'm not too hippy dippy, but it's like, huh, what is that telling me? I think it's time to make some more music, right? I think so. I guess I kind of envisioned a good rate of productivity to be, you know, every 2 years I should put some music out.
Yeah.
And I did that in 2016 and 2017 and in 2016 and 2018.
18,
so,
yeah.
You know, can I get my act together by December 31st, Johnny?
Yeah.
Can I do it?
Of course you can.
I think so. I've got the songs, and I'd like to. This is also very different for me because on the music that's in The Ugly People Need Haircuts, I'm not. There is no producer on that. It's me.
Right.
I'm the boy in a box. I'm playing all the instruments with the exception of a horn. You know, Kevin Flatt does the horn, and I, you know, had asked Scott Clark to do a guitar solo. Nobody wants to hear me play a guitar solo.
No, but it's cool, and it's interesting because the two records that you have released as like a solo artist, you've brought in other producers, Eldridge, right, on the first one, and then Dave Madden.
Yeah.
And then there's guys like me that are wondering what happens when it's just him in the studio alone. You know what I mean?
Well, we know the answer.
Yeah.
It makes you go, are you all right, David?
But that's good.
Yeah, I think so. Listen, the fact that it provoked a question, my hope is that someone, you know, watches The Ugly People Need Haircuts and they don't think about me. Right. I mean, I hope that they see something in it that is relatable to them. And my hope is that someone sees and goes, yeah, that's what this feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, paint my face and take a seizure, but that's how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's a lot of that going on.
So
what all do you have coming into the studio that you're excited about?
I'm excited about there's a band called Cackleberry Jones. They're brand new, and they're doing sort of very psychedelic, you know, rock storytelling. We're kind of free of verse chorus. We've got about 6 days together to get a great amount of work done, and
cool.
I'm going to be the drummer and the keys player.
Oh, awesome!
In October, I'm producing a record for Brandon Damaris, who...
Oh, fantastic,
I was a drummer and co-producer on the first record, and I don't think I'm going to play anything. I don't know, but I'm in the producer chair, and I have no idea what the project sounds like yet, and I have a little anxiety about that. But I keep listening, and I've got a few more weeks to figure it out.
Are you... when you go to produce a record, you're a multi-instrumentalist, you're fucking great at it, and do you enjoy, like, when it's just producing?
Yeah.
Or do you get antsy and, like, want to pick up an instrument?
No.
No?
No, I don't. I mean, well, that's probably not entirely true. As a drummer first and foremost, I'm always tapping and banging on everything, and I love to do percussion overdubs. So that's usually what comes to my mind, is I want to get in there and bang on something. But, you know, usually that's just to entertain myself, so I would never suggest it unless I was really hearing it as part of the piece.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing I really want to do is work with a band again. It's been a good long while since I produced a band, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find one. If you're listening.
Bands.
Because, now is the time. That's what's so frustrating about this with everybody being out of work and having limited funds. Now's the time to create.
Right, right.
When you think about it, has Universal, you know, launched a major artist since March? I mean, are they able to do anything during this pandemic after hiding behind Live Nation for a decade, and artists are making their money on the road, and hey, we're just printing our end over here. I feel like the gatekeepers are wounded. Like, now is the time to come out with some incredible music.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you read Lefset's letters?
No.
I mean, Bob Lefset's in his blog last night was saying where are the musicians? It's the NBA is making a political statement, right? I mean, sport athletics are addressing what is happening in our nation, but where is the music? Where is the music? And it's a great question, and it's time for us to put some music out.
Yeah.
I think there's real opportunity right now. right? Isn't that what investors say? Volatility is good.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, especially, yeah, this time is good. There's a lot of people making music, a lot of reflecting. I've been having them on my show like crazy.
Good.
And I've even noticed that, like you, I was more apt to write a political message in a song when I had read an article in Time magazine when I was 20 about apartheid. Than I was, you know, as a regular songwriter known as. And I feel like, you know, there's a couple of songs that I've written that aren't, you know, in total indictments, but there's definitely the times have informed my art.
Yes. Yes. You know, and everything, I think all art, it's an important part of understanding and critique of art to have your, you know, historical context.
Right.
Right. You know, when and why. When and why. When we get that wrong, we can really fuck up a piece of art.
Right.
You know that song that there's that Christmas song, I Really Can't Stay.
Right.
Oh, baby, it's cold outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sort of been vilified.
Right.
You
like
know,
a rape
as
anthem.
Like, yeah. Yeah, this guy's all rapey and he's,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's roofying her drink.
Right.
Well, but I think there's a good argument that if you look at the historical context, it's the woman who's exercising her power.
Yeah.
In that song. I don't remember who wrote the article about this. It was a female psychologist who had said, you know, at the time, it was very improper for a woman to stay out overnight,
right,
with someone. And that was the running joke, was you would say, hey, what's in this drink? As like, well, this is my excuse. I can't go or drive home.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So now with that piece of the historical context, the story is different.
Yeah.
Again, you know, and I hope that there's art from this time. To match the newsreel footage, right? I mean,
yeah.
I was too young to, I mean, I was born in 78. So, you know, but growing up and seeing the footage from the 60s, the late 60s, that was matched up with that incredibly powerful music.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the newsreel footage from 20 years from now.
Right.
What accompanies it?
Yeah.
Or do we have to go back and play Dylan songs?
Right.
Over it, you know.
Well, it's interesting, and you think back at that time, because I have come across some people that are rushing to put shit out. That there's a song "Ohio," by Crosby, Stills, and Nash, famous song. Tin Soldiers and Nixon's Come In.
Yes,
about the Kent State shooting, and there was something that I read about that earlier this summer somewhere that talked about. I didn't realize that single came out like 4 days or 5 days. Like those guys went into
yes.
the studio like the next day and like rushed it out. Like they got it out as like the same thing. Like you don't really see that newsreel without that song. And you don't really hear that song without thinking about that newsreel.
Yeah. I guess I'm patiently or impatiently waiting for someone to knock me out with a song that really, you know, helps me. That really helps me.
Yeah,
get through what's going on. I don't think I've accomplished that in The Ugly People Need Haircuts. It has helped me personally. I don't hear an anthem in there that everyone could get behind.
Yeah,
but I'm waiting for it. I hope somebody knocks me out with a really great song that helps me, you know, process this and heal from this. And it's what we're supposed to do, I think.
Yeah, the most healing I've gotten musically lately is WAP by Cardi B, but that's
go.
Just me. And most of America, I think. Well, man, dude, it's been great talking to you. People need to get out and see The Ugly People Need Haircuts. As of now, there are 2 episodes. I don't know exactly when this is going to drop. I have a lot of shows in the can, but people can check it out.
Maybe there'll be a third by then.
You can find them on David Messier Music on Facebook and davidmessier.com. So go ahead.
I was going to say they're on YouTube. So
and on YouTube.
You can watch them there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Johnny.
Dude, it's been great talking to you, and it's great to have some insight. Nice to have a guy that knows about the advocacy and kind of like what's going on? What are the people in power trying to do to help us in this situation? It's nice to get your insight on that. So thank you.
I'm happy to help, man.
Yeah.
Take care. Everybody stay safe out there. Peace and love.
Yeah. And I got to tell you that when I thought you were losing your mind, it was meant as a really big compliment. Like that's...
I take it as one.
Okay. Just so you know.
No. No offense taken, man.
Artistic freakouts are my favorite art and freakouts. So...
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Dude, it's been great talking to you. I'll let you know when all this goes up. Take care of yourself.
Appreciate it, man. All right. Cheers.
Great to see you.
Bye.
Bye, man. The pain it moves down to your teeth, and I'm sorry for what I started. All right, my friend David Messier. Such a great dude, man. That was a great conversation. Check out his new variety show with music, songs, puppets, everything you need in a variety show. The Ugly People Need Haircuts. You can find it on YouTube, or you can find it on his Facebook page, David Messier Music. Also, check out his records, man. Time Bomb, Waiting for Eldridge, great records. Find them at davidmessier.com. Great talking to him, great catching up with him. Check out Same Sky Productions. Their studio is fantastic. I've been there for some parties. I sang on a Christmas album they did. Great, great dudes over there. David, Andre, the whole gang. You know what I'm saying? Hey, gang, when you're out there checking out davidmessier.com, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app. On the Podbean app, you can find all of our shows, literally all 900 and whatever number of shows. You can find them on there. All right? Don't forget to like us, like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Get into it. And don't forget to check out The Ugly People Need Haircuts, the new musical variety show from David Messier. Have a great day, whatever it is you're doing, gang. Let's get down. You ever take a look in the mirror? Wonder what holds it together? It meets the wall, it doesn't fall, but you break it and you'll have bad luck. You'll trip and miss the ice cream truck, and I'm sorry for all the violence.